Week is Parshas Vayechi. And so what we're going to be doing tonight is just looking at some of the choice things. I don't know how many of these things are mind-blowing. I like to try to find mind-blowing stuff, but some of it references different comments that he's made over the course of the book of Bereishis, and we're going to begin, however, with a simple question which doesn't get a lot of attention. The first time I ever heard of it actually was when I was studying Yeshiva in Israel, and based on some evidence in the book of Shmuel, when Shmuel first meets Shaul, and he tells him, you're going to leave from here now, and you're going to pass by Kvuras Rachel. And so the question is, where is Kvuras Rachel? Where is Kevur Rachel? And that is the question which he's going to address here, starting with Perek Mem Ches, Pasuk Zayin. So that's the first thing which we're going to look at, which is actually on page 270. So if you remember, Yaakov tells Yosef that he's trying to explain to Yosef why he needs to make sure to bury him in Me'aras HaMachpelah, why he needs to promise. And so he tells Yosef in Pasuk Zayin on page 270, when we were returning from Padan Aram to the land of Canaan, Rachel, your mother, died. When there was still some ways to go until we got to Ephrat, and I buried her there on the way to Ephrat, which is Beit Lechem. So now there's a city called Beit Lechem, right? There's a city called Ephrat. And where is Kevur Rachel? In Beit Lechem, right? The outskirts of Beit Lechem on the way to Ephrat, right? Right?
Wrong.
Okay, let's take a look at what he says. Va'ani bevoyim padan, and Rashi, v'rosh ta'an alav she'ein kamagam l'yanzeh v'yoteri l'lamar dvarim eile be'eish shalom enakvur be'eretz Kanan. So the Rosh makes the point and says, why is Yaakov mentioning this here? He should have said at the beginning of the parsha when he says yishavali, like promise me that you're gonna bury me in the land. So why is he mentioning that here? Okay, l'chaim pirush advarim nogim b'yan anachla. So he says, therefore, the mentioning of where Rachel is buried actually relates to the nachala, the inheritance that Yosef is going to be getting. Amar lo, so he says to him, kishemesa Rachel lo holachtia lekovrab makom acher. When Rachel died, I didn't go to bury her somewhere else. Levishemesa ben chelik binyamin ben chelik Ephraim, because she died on the border between Binyamin and Ephraim. Where, in other words, where the inheritance of the tribe of Binyamin and the tribe of Ephraim is going to be. L'chein kvarti Hashem. And that's why I buried her there. Shetanuach al mishkava b'chelek ha'asid lipol b'yabaneh. I buried her there in the spot, and so that her burial place would be in the place which is where her descendants are going to be living. V'amar, he based lachem, and he says, and I buried her in the place which is on the way to Ephrat, which is Beit Lechem. He says, "Lahodia she'afal pi she'nikreis ata beis lechem asidali karos Ephrat al shem Ephraim." Even though now it's called beis lechem, meaning in the time of Yaakov, in the future it's going to be called Ephrat. Why? Because Ephraim, ayin pei reish, Ephraim, Ephrat, is going to be in that area. Ustam beis lechem mi'bechelik Ephraim. When it says beis lechem, that's beis lechem, which is in the area of Ephraim. When you're talking about Beis Lechem, which is in the area of Judea, which is the Beis Lechem that we know about now, what's it called? Just think about the beginning of Rus. Vayelechish mi Beis Lechem Yehuda. That's what the Megillah says. U'mashu b'chelik Yehuda, nikreis Beis Lechem Yehuda. So what's he saying? He's saying that Kevur Rachel we all go to now, guess what? It might be some lady named Rachel's grave, but it's not this Rachel. Okay, and he's basically making the proof. And actually, if you look in the book of Shmuel, I don't remember which chapter it is. I think it's Shmuel Aleph Perek Tes, chapter 9. You see the same thing. I mean, the evidence is clear. So it's a nice, listen, Kevur Rachel is a place where Jews have been davening for a very long time. But if you think Mama Rachel is there, probably not.
So probably Ephrat, in Eretz Yisrael today, that's the Ephrat he's referring to?
No, that's the Ephrat of the area of Yehuda.
So the red string is not going to work. The red strings that we get from there,
It's a good question.
Is there another Ephrat?
Okay. Yeah, it's like where do the Simpsons live? Springfield, USA. Why? Because there's lots of Springfields. Okay? And the same thing goes for Beit Lechem. Beit Lechem. Okay? That was the first idea. All right. Moving on. Next. The next thing which he addresses is that after Yaakov finishes in Pasuk Yud Beis, so turn the page, Yomer Yisrael Yosef Robinach Lo Vilal Dinei Yerosi Gamo Zerecha, Vayotzei Yosef Osam, top of page 274, Vayotzei Yosef Osam Eim Birkav, Vayishtachu Le'apav Arza, Yosef takes his sons out from his Birkav, means his lap, Vayishtachu Le'apav Arza, they bowed to, or, how do you translate those words? Vayishtachu, Vayishtachavu, Vayishtachu, who bowed to whom? That's basically the question. Take a look. Vayishtachu Le'apav. Okay? Let's see. Where is it? So he says, skip to the end of the first line. V'imkein ein le'apav chozer al Yaakov ki im al Yosef she'ishtateach al panav arza. That who, in other words, to apav, to who, who's the, to who's up, who, apav means his face. Who's bowing? It's referring to Yosef. V'smuchim v'zev v'yishtach l'melech apav le'apav arza. What's the idea? Skip to the third line. Ulefi zeh lamid le'apav, the lamid in the word le'apav, kimilas es, okaos beiz. So how did we how have we been translating the word es? Many times we've had the word es. It means with. So or kaos beiz. So it's like be'apav. Or that it either means that vayishtachu be'apav, he bowed with his face. Essentially, what he's saying is that who's bowing? Not Yaakov. It's Yosef who's bowing. Okay, now that's just a grammatical thing based on the way he reads the word le'apav. But I thought that it was something which I did not know, and so that's why I shared it.
That's how I think it translates here in English. He prostrated himself with his face.
No. Yeah, but it just says that he doesn't really
say who he is.
Right, doesn't say who it is. So he's identifying for us who it is. Okay, the next one.
The irony that Yosef is bound in the dream.
Correct. Right. Correct. Correct. Okay, but again, why is he doing this? Because it's a sign of respect towards his father, based on what his father's doing. His father's giving him the look. You know, you can say, of course, the irony, but the fact of the matter is that Yosef is coming to his father for a bracha, and so who's in charge right now?
Father.
Okay, daddy. Exactly. So we move on. We move on. Pasuk Tesvav. Hamalach. No, sorry, that's the wrong one. Vayivarach es Yosef vayomar. So remember what's going on here. Yosef has brought Ephraim and Manasseh to his father. He's put Ephraim where he's put him, and Manasseh, and Yaakov does this the trick with Sikelos Yadav, whatever that means. And he puts the hands on the not in the way that Yosef had intended. Vayivarach es Yosef vayomar. Elohim asher salchu avosai lefanav Avraham Yitzchak. So while he has his hands on Ephraim and Manasseh, he's blessing Yosef. And he says, the God before whom my fathers walked, Avram Yitzchak, Ho Elohim aro eu simi odia ara yom azeh, the God who shepherded me from that time until now, Hamalach agoel simi korah yivarech asani arim, the angel who guarded me from all bad, he should bless the children, v'karebahem shemi, and my name should be called in them, v'shem avosai, and the names of my fathers, Avram v'yitzchak, v'yidgul arob bekarv la'aretz, and they should grow like fish, in the land. And so the next thing that happens is that Yosef sees what his father is doing, and it's bad in his eyes. Pasuk Yitzayin, he wants to take his father's hands off of Ephraim to put it onto Manasseh. Yosef says to his father, it's not correct. This one, meaning Manasseh, is the firstborn. Put your right hand on his head. And his father refuses, saying, I know my son, he will also be great, however, his brother is going to be greater than him. Take a look in the Ksav HaKabbalah. He says that when he blesses the sons, meaning Ephraim and Manasseh, that is a blessing to the father. Skip to the next line. Veli nira. It's after the period, after the parenthesis and the period. Veli nira. Kalkein tzrichim anu lomar ki birchas Yaakov es hanarim ha'isa achar ishtadel Yosef imo lasim yimino al rosh Menashe habachor. So the Ksav HaKabbalah is saying is that the way the Torah presents it is not actually the order of how things happened. It's not that Yaakov said what he said and then Yosef tried to get him to put his hands correct. And if you think about it, Yosef's standing right there when he doesn't see what's going on. And as soon as, I've performed this show, you know, I performed the parsha in front of kids before this year. And every time I do it, I have to tell you, it's very uncomfortable to do this. You know, to put your hands on the opposite head, it's very uncomfortable. Yaakov's an old guy. Right? You know, he has to get them in position. Every time I do this with kids, I'm like, kids, get as close to me as possible, otherwise I'm not going to be, you have to really be right next to me. So this is a big spectacle. If you think for a second that Yosef doesn't see what's going on, you're not paying attention to what's going on here. So he's saying that Yosef's response at Shlishi took place before all of the talk. Like, what's the point of taking the right hand off of Ephraim's head after the bracha has been given? That's you want to do this before the bracha is given, after the bracha is already done. So Yosef trying to put the right hand on the correct head was before the bracha. That the idea of Vayar Yosef is talking about past tense. It's not, the bracha is over and now Yosef sees, like Yosef ro'eh. It says Vayar. Vayar means past tense. Yosef already saw this. In other words, Shlishi is telling us about something which already happened. It happened before the little speech that Yaakov gives.
Why didn't Yosef just reposition the two sons?
No, the point is that he is repositioning the two sons. He is? Okay, well, fine. That's a different question. Moving them around, making them more comfortable for his father. Okay, that's a possibility. The Torah doesn't say that. Okay. So Yosef saw it, and he said to his father, Lochein Aviv, Namat Akama, Uperush. Uperush Yashis, Lashon Asid. Okay, what's the phrase? Ki yashis aviv, that his father is going to. Ratzalomar shebahoramas yadavu vohushataso osam. He hear Yosef sheritzonol lashis yad yimino al Rosh Ephraim. So, in other words, vayar Yosef. Yosef saw ki yashis aviv, that his father was about to put the hand on the wrong head. Lakach tamach yadav lasir osam al Rosh Hatzayirusumal Rosh Abachor. So that's why he's trying to stop his father and say, no, don't know that, that's the wrong, don't put that there, that's the wrong way to do it. V'diber dvar v'al Yaakov, and he spoke to Yaakov. Yaakov v'shivlo, yadati b'ni yadati, v'ayak kol zed l'fnei ha-bracha. When Yaakov says, I know, that was all before the bracha, im kein. Shalosh is a psukim, v'yar yisev, v'yamar yisev, v'yamayin aviv, all those psukim which I read to you before looking at the Haksav HaKabbalah, kol zed ha-yad l'fnei ha-bracha, it was all before the bracha. And then afterwards, Berachas Anarim, Bevracha Hamascheles, Walhim, Esher Salachti, etc. Then he gives the bracha to the kids. Azam Markan, Vayvarachas Yosef, and that's why it says there that he blessed Yosef. Ve'ein milas es kan siman apaul she Yosef umavarach aval inyano kimilos im alit starfus. It's not saying Vayvarachas Yosef that he blessed Yosef, but it's that he blessed them.
With Yosef.
In other words, they're all being blessed. Ki kamosha aras milas es al starfus agashmi. Just as we've seen before, that es refers to a joining in the physical realm. Es Yaakov ishu beisavo, right? That with Yaakov, his family came down to Egypt. That's just the physical reality of their moving. Shitstarfu Yaakov bivasam. Kacha yore al starfus aruchani kamo es olim asalech noach. Sometimes es just refers to a physical with. They traveled with Yaakov, but Esalim Esalech Noach, that Noach walked with God, that's referring to a spiritual a union. Shabachol Talach Usav, Tzirev Machashavto, Liosan, Kefir Ratzon Elohim V'loasam U'ma Hefech Ratzono, that this is the way he taught his so actually I'm not even sure if he's referring to Noach in the comment, or if he's referring to Yosef, but essentially that Yosef is raising his kids right. Kachamilas es Yosef, who would starfus ruchani machshavi, shibirach Yaakov usanarim would starfus Yosef, or tzomar behaskamas das ratzon Yosef. That essentially Yosef is agreeing that after his father has the exchange with him, saying, I know what the kids are, and I know who they are, so Yosef accepted what his father said. Ki bitel Yosef dato mibnei da'as aviv, He said, all right, if that's your intention, then that is correct. And so where does the hand remain? The right hand? On Ephraim's head? And a discussion. And that's the way it was. And Yosef agreed, and he gets the bracha as well. Okay? And the last line is, Lo haisa bracha shelo l'ritzon Yosef. Right? Can you imagine if Yosef is sitting there broigus? Dad, put the hand on the correct head. No, I'm not doing it. Yosef says, okay, that's it. He accepts what his father says. Okay. Now, the next one, I'm not going to do inside, basically the question is, why does Yaakov say, HaMalach and Goel Osi? So you can look through it on your own space and time, but the idea that he says here is that actually the part which I was thinking of doing most of this, you know, actually the part which I didn't give you in italics, I'll do with you. Okay, that's the main point. Actually, skip to the third line. V'ra'isi davar chadash b'michilta d'Rabbi Yishim bar Yochai kisham malach hushma d'kadosh baruch hu. Okay, he makes the argument that the word malach is a name of God, and through all the part which is in italics, he proves the point, saying that what does God do? We actually had something similar when explaining how Yaakov says, Anochi Esav Bechorecha. Anyone remember how he explained what Esav means there? He said that Esav is a nickname. Because what does the word Esav mean? Esav is Anochi Esav Bechorecha, Asisi Kechol Asher Tzivisani. Right? Esav comes from the word Asa, which means to do. He says, Anochi Esav, I'm the do guy. I'm the guy who does what you say. D-O. I'm the guy who does what you say. So that's a kinui. It's a nickname. So similarly, if you say that Malach is a name referring to God, Malach comes from the word Malacha. Malacha means to work, to create, to do. Vayichal Elokim is called Melachto Asher Asa. God is the one who does Malacha. And the one who does Malacha is a Malach. And that anytime you have somebody who is referred to as a Malach anywhere, they have a mission, they have a job, they have work to do. That's what a malach is. So the idea that, and this is essentially the point which he makes, you go to the very end. The Fizek, Shamar Yaakov, HaMalach, HaGoelosi, Ein Kavanaso, Al Malach, Emtsa'i, Shliach Hashgacha. You see where I am in the middle of page 2? The very end of that paragraph. Okay? He's not referring to an angel, not referring to some middleman. It's God who is the Goel Osi Mikol Ra, who protects me from all bad. And it's from him that the brachos come. His major problem is, how is Yaakov seemingly praying to an angel or asking an angel to intercede on his behalf? Talk to the boss. Talk about the boss. So he says that Malach here refers to God. That's his chiddush. Okay, that's the idea.
Just here or...
Here. In other words, the way that Yaakov is using it, it's not. I mean, it's clearly in some cases, it's not. You know, it's not referring to a Vayavo HaMalachim Sodoma, right? The people who left from Abraham and came to Sodom. However, you want to define them, you want to call them messengers, you want to call them angels, whatever. Clearly, there it's not. I mean, and it's more than one. But here, the way that Yaakov is using the word Malach, he's saying that is it's referring to God. Okay. Good. Yeah, so when we get David's approval, it's all good. Okay. All right, we move on. Okay. V'ikare Mahem Shemi. All right, I mean the main point here, he actually has two points, but there was a concern that Yosef had. The concern that Yosef had was that his sons would somehow not be accepted by Yaakov. Why? Why? Because they were born in Egypt and they were raised in Egypt, etc. So that's why Yaakov needs to tell him, Yikar Abraham Shemi, that I'm accepting them. And he says, and it's even further, you know, that's the case if you say that Asnas is the daughter of Potipharah. Look at the third line. Ildas asovrim ki Asnas eshes Yosef yibas dina sheyolda mishchem ben chamor achivi. Right? There's a view, and we talked about this a couple weeks ago, that Asnas, or was it last week? That Asnas is the That Asnas is the daughter of Dina. There's a whole midrashic line of thinking about that. And so, if that's the case, then right, exactly. Then, if that's the case, then it's even more so being supported in that way. Okay, I don't want to read it inside. Moving on. Becharbi v'kashti. Okay, so let's take a look. So Yosef, after all this, after all the bracha given to Yosef through the sons, or the bracha given to all of them, the end of the chapter, page 274, Yaakov says to Yosef, Ani nasati l'cha Shechem achad al-checha. I'm giving you Shechem, basically one up on your brothers. Asher l'kachi miyad ha-emori b'charbi v'kashti, that I took from the Emori with my sword and my bow. So the question is, what on earth is Yaakov talking about? When did Yaakov do that? Take a look at what he says. B'chabri b'kashti. K'shar b'shimon v'lei b'yes an sheshchem niskan sukol su yosem l'zdaveg lehem v'chiger Yaakov klei milchama k'negdan. He quotes Rashi, who says that when Shimon and Levi fought against Shechem, all of the surrounding people fought back against them. Now, in the Haksav HaKabbalah, he said, yeah, exact opposite. He said that they were a double loser, right? Or was that the Kliyaka? I don't remember because I reviewed what he said this year. But basically, that when they joined, when they circumcised, no, he said that they felt the regret. That was their cave. That was what the Ksav HaKabbalah said. I think it was the Kliyaka who said that when they circumcised, they lost their alliance with everybody else because they said you joined the Jewish people. No, it was the Ksav HaKabbalah. It was the Ksav HaKabbalah. He said there's nothing like religious hatred. So they lost their alliance with everybody else because they joined the Jewish people. And when Yaakov's family saw that they were lying, they lost their alliance with them. So they had no allies anymore. Okay, but so I don't know why he's saying this, but he's quoting Rashi. I'm sorry. Why is he saying that? Because his view is based on a midrash. And actually, if you really want to have some entertainment, you have to look at the Yalkut Shimoni on Parshas Vayishlach, after the whole Shechem story, where he describes how the nations of Canaan ganged up against them and tried to fight against them. And so essentially he summarizes that. He says that it happened 7 years later, and if you can find it's about five or six lines down. Lefi Shela Achar Kein, let's see who that is. Last word on the line. Okay, Lefi, so the first word online is Shela Achar Mikein. Okay, after those 7 years, Chazer Yaakov Anav L'Shechem Vayavoshan, they returned to Shechem after they had left for 7 years. Amru Lo Dailam Shargu Kolan Shechem Elisha Yorshim Esartzam. So now the people all around say it's bad enough that they killed all the people of Shechem. Now they've returned in order to take over all the land. So they gathered in order to kill them. And in front of the city, they had a very heavy, heavy battle. But Yara Yaakov Chitzim, Yaakov shot arrows. Vaharag Lamelech Chatzor, Ulamelech Sarta, Ulamelech Aram, Ulamelech Minage, Vaharag Min Yimino Smelo. Yaakov was just shooting arrows and just killing people left and right. And so the Amorites came, Uvoitzlam, Beli, Klay Milchama. And they basically surrendered. They came without any weapons. They bowed and they requested to make peace. So they returned all the sheep and that they had captured, two for one. They even paid a heavy tax on it. And they returned everything that they had taken. So essentially, that's what he quotes. He quotes that midrash and says that that's what Yaakov is referring to. Because otherwise, how do you get to this idea that Yaakov took anything from the Emori? The Shechemites, I don't know that they were Emorim. That's something which I think he addressed in the line that I skipped. Asher l'kachim yaman amri zuchamor v'shechem v'chi emorihim. That they're somehow included, but that is not the view. He actually jumps on this bandwagon of that midrashic idea about the battle which had taken place at that time. Okay. All right. So this, the point that I'm trying to bring out here is just new ideas, things which we may not have seen before. All right. The next page three in your book is taken from the Birchos Yaakov, and specifically the bracha given to Reuven, bracha given to Shimon and Levi, and the bracha given to Naphtali. Beyond those, I didn't really like most of the things that he shared. I just didn't find them to be interesting enough to bring them. But let's look at the stuff which he says regarding Reuven. Okay, let's begin. So we're introduced to the blessings on the bottom page 274. And Yaakov calls his children. And by the way, he does not address the question at all, the difference between the names of Yaakov and Yisrael. There's a lot of going back and forth, and there's a lot of talk about it amongst other commentaries, but the Ksava Kabbalah didn't really find that interesting, so he didn't touch it at all.
Where were his children that he called them?
Whatever, I don't know.
It's very unclear.
Wherever they were. He sends out a message. Come on and gather, I'm going to die. Pasuk Gimel. Reuven b'choriyat kochi v'reishisoni. Reuven, you're my firstborn. You're my strength. The beginning of my vigor. Yeser se'esu yeser uz. Foremost in rank and foremost in power or strength. Pachas kamayim al tosar. Water like impetuosity. Al tosar, you cannot be foremost. Ki alisa mishkavei avicha, because you mounted your father's bed. I'm just using the article's translation. Az chilalta yitzuei Allah, that you desecrated him. Who ascended my couch?
He initially said it was Lashon Hara, right?
That's right. Ksava Kabbalah's interpretation of what happened between Bilha and Reuven is that Reuven said Lashon Hara about her, calling her Pilegesh, basically denigrating her to others, since she really was one of Yaakov's wives, and that was the problem. The problem was one of denigration. Okay, so he's not going to change that. He does continue with that view. But let's see what he says here. So the first thing that he says is Pachas Kamayim Humosav al Ha'Se'es V'Az. Okay, so in other words, look at the end of the previous pasuk. Yeser Se'es V'Yeser Az Pachas Kamayim Al Tosar. What has this water like impetuosity is the Yeser Se'es and the Yeser Az. Rotsalomar. Hasa'es v'ha'az, okay, the rank and the power, nitrokan mimcha v'lo notar mehem l'cha klum. They basically float away from you, and you have nothing left. V'amar kamayim, so why did he say like water? You know, if you want to say that it's something which should be lost, so you could say it was destroyed with the fire. What happens when you destroy with the fire? You're left at least with with ashes. There's something left behind. Or maybe the fire even gets put out before there's only ashes remaining. So what happens if you use something else? So he says, Mayim, why Mayim? Marim Alechas Malkam Shanishbuchu Lonasar Em Klum. Okay, we have proof tonight, okay, from water all over the floor. When you pour water, there's nothing left in the container. There's nothing left. It all goes out. As opposed to Ki Hashemen Shanishbach, if you pour out oil, what happens? There's always a film. There's always a residue. Nishar me'ad davuk bimkomo. Yayin shenishbach nishar recho. Even if all the wine goes out, what do you have left in the bottle? The smell, and that's the Vilna Gaon. Who yoter nachon beperish mafarshim shetzirichim letosvus milin al hashana mikra. All the other commentaries are trying to figure out what is pachas kamayim al tosar. Like, what is it? They're trying to figure out what the water is. He says, well, if you just say that the water issue is referring to the power that Reuven lost, now you understand how he lost everything. That's all that it is. And one of the things which we've seen with the Ksava Kabbalah is that he tries to explain how there are no words missing. You don't have to fill in the gaps. There are no gaps. So that's how he demonstrates there not being any gap here. Ki alisa mishkavei avichas chilalta. What did you do with the father's mishkavei, right, with the father's bed? So he says, the rabbi sayna b'chet Reuven she'eno rak bilbul yitzuei aviv. The rabbi said that what Reuven did was switching his father's bed. Asher l'da'ati hu b'mesh shekara b'shem pilegesh. My opinion was that he called her a pilegesh and he lowered her status, and that was what Reuven had done. Okay, you and Shem, check out my commentary. Yirash she'ein milas chilalta kan kinyan at chalel zbitcha. He says chilalta. Az chilalta doesn't mean that you desecrated, like the way you desecrate a girl, right? Through having an illicit sexual liaison with somebody. That's not what it means. Skip to the next line. Aval chilalta, you'll have it. Let me see where it is. I can't do it. Yeah, and towards the end of the third line, aval chilalta hu kinyan chalol mi malka v'saraya. Chilalta le'eretz nizru, shinyanam horodas davar mi yokro v'chashivuso. Chilalta means You lowered the status from something which is precious and important. You lowered it down. V'kein milas alisa eino ha'aloya l'shkiva. When it says that az chilalta yitzui Allah or ki alisa mishkevei avicha, alisa doesn't mean you got up on a bed in order to do an act. Rak inyano istalkus v'archaka. What does it mean, alisa mishkevei avicha? You distance your father's mishkavim, your father's relations with his wife, because of your lowering the status. Because chilalta yitzui Allah, because of the lashon hara which you did. Okay, so basically the Aksava Kabbalah is doubling down on his commentary on what happened between Reuven and Bilhah, and he's proving it with the way he's explaining to us the interpretation of these words, chilalta and alisa, which people, as he tells us all the time, are translating incorrectly. Okay, and that's how he explains it here. Let's go to the next one. Which is Shimon Velevi. Okay, so just look at the pasuk. Shimon Velevi Achim, it's on page 276. Shimon Velevi, our brothers, Kalei Chamas Mecheros Tehem. Their weaponry is a stolen craft. That with their anger they killed the man, and with their ritzonam, with their desire, with their whim, they hamstrung an ox. Okay. So first of all, Shimon v'Levi Achim, take a look inside. Amr brave gracious Rabbi Shimon v'Levi Achim, b'chula meinam Achim. What do you mean, Shimon and Levi are brothers? But they're all brothers. What do you have to designate these two guys as brothers? Ela Achim be'etza achas. They are brothers in that they have one mind for certain things. B'maisa Shechem u'mechiras Yosef. Okay, these two were in cahoots, right? Thick as thieves, right? Thick as thieves regarding what took place in Shechem, in other words, to kill the city, and with regard to the sale of Yosef. In their anger, they killed a man who refers to Shechem, the city of Shechem. Uvirtzanam ikrushor zeh Yosef. Zeshenikrashor, right? Yosef is going to be referred to as Ben Paras Yosef, Banosada Ale Shur. Yosef is referred to as an ox. And so the idea of overturning the ox is what they did to Yosef. Rotsu la'akoris Yosef. Lo shakaru, shari Yosef melechaya. They wanted to overturn Yosef. Not that they were successful, because Yosef is a king. El mutnei shemach ashav tamba usa apoel, hoyel okrom in olam, nikru okri. Because they wanted to do it, they are called Okrin, people who wanted to overturn the guy, but they did not, they were not successful. Okay, let's see. Okay, skip to the end of, let's see, after the period. I look for the word Hine. Hine. So it's the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6th line, 7th word in the line. Hine. He made the Hine, midiyiches l'shchem po'al hariga. Since he's applying the verb of murder to what took place in Shechem, Uli Yosef rak lashon akira, and for Yosef he's not assigning an actual completion of a verb, but it's rather an intent. Yeshmach gadol l'dvareinu b'mamar v'yisnaklu osalam yiso. So now you understand better what I wrote. He's saying when it describes what happened when Yosef arrived at Dotan, where the brothers were, by Yisnaklu Osalam Yisrael, and they planned to kill him. Shetamo Shemitzio Tachboles Mirma LaAsosim Yosef Davar Shiduma LeEinav Sherotzin LaMisel. He says that they did not really plan. They didn't really want to kill him. They were not going to kill him, but they wanted to scare Yosef to the point that Yosef would think that they had intended, that they did intend to murder him. Al Kavana Zu Amru. And that, and it's through that intent to scare him, they said, let's kill him. But their thought process really was just to throw him in a pit, as they ended up doing. And even without Reuven's intervention, remember Reuven said, we're not going to kill him, let's throw him into the pit. They were never planning to kill him. As you can see from the language of the pasuk there, which we're not going to go back to now, but that is a homework for everybody. And when they threw in the pit, that's like ruining the hoofs of the animal. which causes a tremendous amount of pain, umoneh mimena halicha, and prevents it from being able to walk on its own will, levad, right, alone. Be'ein misa nimshechas mizev muchlab, but they don't necessarily die. You throw Yosef in a pit, guess what? He can't get out. Okay, does that mean he's going to die? Well, you can continue to throw food down to him. He could survive down there. Who knows? He could live there for a long time. It's like a prison. Right, what kind of prison was Yosef in Egypt? Abor. Hotziyum and Abor, right? I mean, they take him. So that's, it's a place where a person, even if it's not a good life, but he could survive in there because they weren't planning to kill him. Umimashe Amar liYehuda miterafani Alisa, and from what Yaakov is about to say to Yehuda in the next blessing, miteraf bni Alisa, that from tearing up of my son or my son you arose, yadanu sheyada gam kein mamar Yehuda mabetsa kina rog. We are given an indication that Yaakov knew what Yehuda had said at that time as well, which means that even if Yaakov didn't know during the 22 years that Yosef was absent, in the last 17 years he's been doing his homework to find out exactly what happened on that fateful day. Mevuah shenodel Yaakov kol prote maasim she'asu achim imoaz. Yaakov knew all the details of what had taken place. Imhoisam itaskav nasam b'lechu v'nargei l'hargo b'emes. And if they had truly intended to kill him, v'rak me'atzas ruven nimnu v'lugmor po'al ha'ariga lamar amar lashon okru ha'maktin pulosam ha'maguna. Why did Yaakov say, or ikru rather, the word is ikru. Ikru, sure. Why does Yaakov use a word which says they intended, but not that they actually did? If they were to completely to be blamed for horrible deeds, even if they just happened to not be successful, then why would Yaakov belittle it and say, "No, it wasn't such a big deal"? Because in the scheme of things, it wasn't such a big deal. They weren't really intending to kill. Biotero yelolamar hamitu shor, right? What's the phrase? Kivi apam uvirtzonam hamitu shor, or him too shor, that they tried to kill. He says they didn't do that. Okay, so that's the view which he espouses here, that the brothers were not as bad, and that's why he can give them, in the context of a blessing, language which doesn't make them as bad as we might otherwise suppose them to be on account of everything else that we know about them.
But aren't there situations where we give credit to the other brothers for trying to help? You know, if their intent was not to kill him, the other brothers then would have known that as well. And we give credit to Reuven because he was going to go back. And
I don't know how much credit we give to Reuven. As a matter of fact, there's a midrash which is critical of Reuven. And it's also, I mean, I don't know if it, maybe critical is not the right word, but it's a midrash. I think it's Tanhuma somewhere, but I know I've seen it in other midrashim as well, and it's in Rus Rabbah as well, that says about three people that had they only known that their story would have been recorded, they would have done things very differently. Reuven, had Reuven known his story would be recorded for posterity, he would have taken Yosef home to his father on his shoulders. If Aaron had known that when he would go meet Moshe on Moshe's initial return to Egypt, that would be recorded, he would have greeted him with a marching band. If Boaz had known that his giving Ruth a little bit of grain would have been written that way, then he would have given her fatted calves. That's what the Midrash says. So is that critical of Reuven? I mean, Reuven, why do you need to be written down for posterity to do the right thing? So your brothers are going to get angry with you. Just do the right thing. Save the kid. So, I mean, yes, we do give Reuven a little bit of credit. But he was clearly scared. Okay. All right, I'm not going to do the bracha to Naftali, but just to tell you that he and a number of other commentaries, and if you just want to look it up, you can check in the Living Torah, Rabbi Aryeh Kaplan's book, where he gives a couple of interpretations. You know, the idea that Naftali ayala shlucha, that it's referring to a deer, is disputed by many commentaries. They don't think that it's a deer. They say ayala is referring to a kind of tree. And the tree has branches, and the branches give off fruit and sustenance to its people. So it's interesting. I actually wrote an article, you could probably find it on my blog, called The Bracha to Naftali. I may have quoted the Aksava Kabbalah at the time. I don't remember. I wrote it a couple years ago. But it presents the different opinions there. All right, we move on to the last thing also, which I'm going to tell you outside in before chapter 50. And that is... let's see. Yeah. the second item on page 4, which is where it says Yitzchak and Rivka. And essentially, the question that the Aksava Kabbalah asks is, how could Yaakov refer to his parents in that way? Isn't it a little disrespectful? If you want to just see the pasuk inside, page 284, he's telling all of his kids, you have to bury me in Maras Machpelah. Why? Because Shama Kavru Es Avram Es Roshto, Shama Kavru Es Yitzchak Es Rivka Roshto, and Shama Kavarti Es Leah. So you want to talk about Grandpa Avram and Grandma Sarah, so we all know. That's Grandpa Joe. That's Grandpa Avram. Okay, no problem. But your mother and father, you know, they're mom and dad. They're Abba Ima, you know, Tati Mam, whatever it is. So how could he refer to his parents as Yitzchak and Rivka? Isn't that a little irreverent? Couldn't he be a little more respectful? And so the point that the Aksava Kabbalah makes here is that it could very well be that Abraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, on account of the fact that their names were essentially ordained by God, right? Abraham went from Avram, which his parents gave him, to Abraham. Yitzchak was named by God. They were told, you're going to name him Yitzchak, right? And Yaakov, so, I mean, he was certainly named Israel by God, but with the Yaakov side, that's an interesting question. We don't have proof from that from the Torah, but nonetheless, let's assume, because that's the theme which he presents. And he says that there's a holiness factor to it, which goes above and beyond the respect that he's supposed to have for his parents. And that's why when we talk about Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, we're talking about something extremely special. So that's how Yaakov is allowed to do that, with reference to his own parents, in that vein. And that's the point which he essentially makes on Pasuk Lamed Aleph. Okay? All right. If you want to just see where he says that, it's on the fourth to last line at the three dots. Shem Shalosh Hazavos, Avraham Yitzchak Yaakov, Hem Shemos Asher Pi Hashem Nekvam. These are the names which God established. Is there anything more special than that? Names which God established. God is watching over these people from the before they were even conceived. To basically say, these are going to be the avos of the Bnei Israel. Okay, now we get to chapter 50, and now we're going to have fun. Because everything we have here is a lot of fun. Is a lot of fun stuff. Okay, the first one. Pasuk Gimel. So Yaakov dies, and we're told by so that the embalmers, they embalm Yaakov. It takes 40 days to do that. And Egypt cries for him for 70 days. Okay, so the Aksava Kabbalah is now going to tell us why people cry. Okay? In case you don't know why people cry, he's going to give us a summary. Let's take a look at this. Poel Bechi, who, and I keep on using this acronym, I don't know what it is. Reish Shin Pei. Migzeras Bach Asher Yoreal Davar Meturaf Umilbilbal. He says, usually when somebody cries, it's because they are confused. After the Micha parenthesis, he has galus hamavucha shebelev v'har oso lachutz. Crying is the way which somebody's bewilderment comes from their makes its way from their heart and is now expressed outwardly. Ayde haramas kol the horadas dema'os through the raising of the voice, like in a wail, for example, and the releasing of tears. V'eino inyan anas bechavana. It's not something which a person does with intent. Kiyem be'echrech tiv'i. It's a natural response. Haba me'argosh ha'tzar, which comes from feeling of pain, v'yogon, and anguish. Oh, simcha yisera, or great joy. Because in all these cases, the blood which is in the heart, sovev olech be'igol, it gets circulated, v'navuch, milatzeis, and it wants to get out. V'goreim, but obviously it can't get out. V'goreim with fikas alev, and so it puts tremendous pressure on the heart. U'lachatzo, and it's another form of pressure. V'ma'amad hazeh, ein ha'adam yechol l'kos. And at that stage, when the heart is just in this crazy turmoil, a person is unable to cry. Ki lachatz alev mi'akvo, because the heart, the pressure on the heart is just, it's preventing it. Aval achakach, kesha yitrokan al yad, when his heart is able to calm down a little bit, then the crying can come. Im baramas kol ram, whether it's with the crying of the, you know, the voice. Im chashai, whether it's going to be quiet. Im bahoradas dmaos, whether there's going to be tears. O biladam, or no tears. Hakol kvi arkavas adam umazago beichuto. It has to do with the person's what's the word I'm looking for? Well, echuto means his essence. Mizago means his temperament. And based on the intensity of whatever it is that's causing him to cry. And what's a little different? Bechias atinokos. What about when babies cry? Baharamas kol b'lidimaos. They just use their voice. No tears. Bechias shel simcha. The crying of joy is b'dimaos. Tears. B'likol. Without a crying out. Ushar b'chios ben b'zeh ben b'lizeh ben b'zeh and every other cry. Okay, so I mean it's not something which you typically see a commentary try to explain, but he's just trying to give us context to explain how is it that Egypt is crying. Well, what kind of crying are they doing? Well, fit it into one of these situations. Okay, the next thing which happens is okay. All right, pasuk zayin. Ayal Yosef Lekboris Aviva Yalu Itok Kol Avdei Paro Ziknei Beiso. So I'm not going to read it inside, but basically he says Vayalu Ito. How do you translate the word Ito?
With Yosef,
with him,
right? With him. But for what purpose? Right? Ito means with him.
To bury.
So are they together? So he distinguishes between the word S and between the word Im in terms of what the mindset is. S is about. Is about people who are together and they are equal. Umilas im. Mora alachibur im mikre agufo kinyanav umshar masha shayach lo mtiachesilav apazula shivui gamur im agufatzmo. He says im means that they're not equals. So what does it mean by aluito kol of de paro? So I said I wasn't going to do it inside. Well, I'm going to do it inside. So let's take a look. Let's see if I could guide you to the end. Ulazeh. Let's find the word ulazeh. It's the second to last full line, second word after the comma. Ulazeh al avdei paro. I'm in pasuk zayin. Shehem hasarim hachashuvim shealu imo b'shaveh. Right. It says vayalu ito. Who's coming up? Avdei paro. Who are avdei paro? The officers of paro. Ubechabura achas ipomilas ito. And so they're all one group. V'halarechav aparashim hashfalim mi Yosef v'lo halchu ito b'shaveh. And regarding the Rechem and Parashim, regarding the chariots and everything else, what does it say? Vayalu ito kol avdei paro. Where's the part where it mentions the Rechem?
Yes, gam Rechem.
Vayalu imo gam Rechem Parashim. Okay, so the Rechem Parashim, they're the minions. They're the soldiers, they're the lower people, and the people who came ito are the upper people. Okay, that's the point. So he's distinguishing between S and Im, according to his Shita. I've seen others say the exact opposite, by the way, in terms of S and M. So we're not going to get into that debate. But anyway, that's the point. But that is Shita So. In other words, he's given us that approach before. Okay, the next one, Vaya'al, Pasuk Tes, right? Pasuk Tes. Vaya'al imo gam rechav gam parashim vayim machane kavei ma'od. Why is he bringing soldiers? So even though they're not with him, in other words, they're not equals with him, he says something, I've never heard this before.
Yeah.
So he gets this from Yosef ben Yosifon. Yosifon is Yosef ben Gurion. It's a historical. You know, I don't know if it's based on some research. I don't know how authentic it is in terms of it being a historical book. But there, what he says there is that he brought them in case there would be an attack. There was a concern that Esau's descendants would attack, saying we get the Me'arat Samach Pe'ilah. So skip to the line Kitzafu, towards the end of the second line. Kitzafu ben Eliphaz bali lachem bahem. He actually saw that Eliphaz was coming. Eliphaz was Esav's son. Yosef echelo tafsu oso. Yosef and his soldiers captured him. His kol giborav and all of his strong men. Vayaveh oso osam etzrayim. They brought them down to Egypt in chains. Vayesh Hashem abeis ha'asurim kol yimei Yosef. He's there the rest of the book. Anybody ever hear that one before?
I never heard that one.
All right, well, there you go. Okay, that's why I shared it with you. All right, the next thing which he has here is Pasuk Yud Aleph. Take a look at Pasuk Yud Aleph. That the people who lived in Canaan saw the Avel. Now, what is Avel, everybody? What's Avel? By morning, of course, right? 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 Wrong. Okay. So he says that Evel does not mean morning. Ein shem Evel, Lashon, rather, what is it? Lashon toga. Toga means grief, vaspade, and eulogizing, kamosh regi in leparsho, the way that people normally do it. He in Lashon bilbul, the tiruf adas. It's referring to confusion and just a mess up of the mind. Somebody who is in real evil is just in a they're in a fog. They don't know what's going on. So what does he say at the end? Skip to the okay, I want to skip to the part where it says the evil paul amachshava. Okay? Where is it? You guys have it? Turn the page. Turn the page. Second line. Okay, go three words before that. Actually, go to the beginning of the line. The beginning of line two. Aval ba'etzem toga l'chud ve'evel l'chud. You have toga, which is grief, and evil. Shayagon po'al lev, anguish, that's a feeling of the heart. Va'evel po'al amachshava. And evil is a feeling of the mind. Mishum kach ba. Lerov Ispael Vayisabel al Beno Vayisablua al Meod. He's giving examples of what Avel means, how it is a feeling of the mind. Lefisha Misabel, who Misabel Atzmo Zeh Bilbul. The person who is Misabel is trying to just come to grips with the reality in their mind. They're trying to make sense of it all. Vishubitzayer Lefanov Tamid Mikre Shekarohu. He's trying to figure out this thing that happened, but it's just throwing the mind for a loop. If somehow the person doesn't remember what happened, then the person can get back to normal life. Think about anybody who's been in Avelus, right? How do you get back to normal life? When you're able to compartmentalize and in your mind and move on. I once met somebody in this shul, the daughter-in-law of somebody, one of our members, whose father had recently passed away. He was 60. She was a total wreck. And I said to her, look, I can't deny, you know, your pain and your loss, but you have to find a way to compartmentalize, because if you let your father's passing destroy your life, you have to be able to I'm not saying forget, but you have to move on with your life. And that's what he's saying. That's what Avel means. Avel is a mindset. You can have your grief, but Avel is something which needs to be compartmentalized. And so when we look at Mitzrayim, they needed to figure out how do we get on to the next stage? How do we move on? They're not feeling grief over Yaakov's death. They're just, you know, there was a guy who's a patriarch of this family. He was impressive, whatever bracha he brought to Egypt through, you know, with the river and everything. So all that is something that they just needed to come to grips with. But that's not an emotional feeling. That is a mental situation.
Also, have to come to grips with how this would affect Yosef. You know, not so.
Fine,
much
exactly. But his point is that it's not what when we say it's not what we call mourning that they're experiencing.
Right.
It's a different state which they have to deal with. That is the point. Okay. Okay, the next one I'm not going to do it. It just explains who goes first. It's really a Hilchos Avelus comment in terms of who goes first between Yosef and everybody else when they're going to the burial versus how it gets switched around when they're coming back. So you can read it for yourself. Look at Pasuk Tezvav. I found this to be a little fascinating. Pasuk Tezvav. So bottom of 286. Vayiruach Yosef ki meis avihem. Yosef's brothers see that their father died. Right? Okay, big chiddush there. Okay. Vayomeru, and they say Lu Yistameinu Yosef. I'm going to use the article translation just for the fun of it. Perhaps Joseph will nurse hatred against us. Okay, and then he will surely repay us all of the evil that we did him. Now, how do they translate the word Lu? Perhaps. Think about how you know the word Lu in other contexts. What does it mean?
Halavai.
Lu yehi chid varecha. If only, right? Lu yehi chid. If only, and as Ellie's saying,
it's a wish.
Right, it's a wish that it should happen. What does it mean? Halavai, right? Halavai means, oh God, if only this would happen. Look what he says. Lu Yisrael Yosef, Halavai Shisrael Yosef. Ach Hashem Yeshiv. They're saying we want him to. Klamar Shiyeh Kach Ach Tachlis Kamosh Ha'isa Tachlis Asina Asher Anachno Ayinu Sonim Oso. That what's supposed to happen is he's supposed to get us back. Uvezeh Milas Lumavuar Kibishar Mekomos. What's the point? They're saying if he doesn't get us back, we have no idea. Right? Yosef could live another 50, 60, 70 years. He could just be biding his time. Will you hit me, don't lecture me, right? Just get it over with. So Yosef, like, that's what he's saying. Lou, he's saying they want him to get. They want him to get the back.
But how does that fit in with the next pasuk? Read Tazayin.
So that's an interesting question. And the commentaries go crazy about that one too. Were they lying to Yosef?
Maybe, but if they wanted him to get him back, then this pasuk wouldn't fit in.
Well, I don't know. Because, it's like one of my favorite, there's a movie which came out in the 90s. It's called Glengarry Glen Ross. And in that movie, Jack Lemmon? Yeah? I think Jack Lemmon, right? Jack Lemmon. I think that's the name, right? Jack Lemmon. Jack Lemmon's the Chron of the Bracha. He plays this guy called something Levine the Machine. Levine, that's what they call him. He works in this fake accounting office where they sell bogus stocks. Okay? And at one point in time, he comes to some guy's house to make a sale. And it's pouring outside, and he's wearing this shabby, awful raincoat and this awful hat. And he comes in, and he's trying to convince this guy that he should buy a certain stock. It's a great deal and everything like that. And I remember reading Roger Ebert's review of the movie, and he says, this is the best work that Jack Lemmon has done in his lifetime. It is incredible, the way that he pulls this off, because his character knows that he's lying, the character he's talking to knows that he's lying, and yet they're going through these formalities as if, yeah, I know, like, he knows that he's done. And the other guy knows that I'm never working with you again because you're a crook. And they all know it, but they're going through the formalities like, yeah, I'll talk to you Monday. Like, okay, yeah, great. And that's the way I view this whole story here. They know, Yosef knows they're lying, they know they're lying, and they're just like, oh, you're right, oh, daddy said I shouldn't, okay, I'll cry, all right. And Yosef ends up leaving them alone. Okay. Now, the fascinating thing is here how, but he takes the very next thing. And maybe, Steve, this answers your question even a little better. Yosef starts crying when they tell him, our father said you shouldn't do anything to us. Yosef says, look, I could get you back, but really, I'm not that kind of a guy. Okay, I'm not God. Now, how does God get people back?
Mida
keneged mida. Right? That's it. Now, and my rule is that if you don't see the mida keneged mida in the punishment, in this quote unquote punishment, then you're not reading the story right. You have to find what the mida keneged mida is. Yosef says, Atem chashavtem alai ra'ah, you thought to do bad to me. Elohim chashav al tavah, so Elohim thought to make it good. L'mana sofei mazel achayosam rav, so that I can now help everybody live and become into a great nation. Take a look at the Aksava Kabbalah, and maybe this will blow your mind. Okay? Chashavtem alai ra'ah. Mimikra zeh muchach. He says, from this pasuk, it's proof. Delokadasa mefarshim miyachasim mechiras Yosef la'achav. It's proof that all the mefarshim who say that Yosef's brothers sold him are wrong. De'ikad divrehem, ayolo Yosef la'azkir, lashan asiya, hanov la'masa mechira. Yosef should have said that you guys sold me. He says, you guys, chashava, you thought to do something. The way that Pasuk always describes an act is to talk about the act along with the thought process. And he gives a few examples of this. Skip to the part where it says, umidilo hiskir. Okay? See where I am? I should be in the fourth line. Yeah, towards the end of the fourth line. Umidilo hiskir rak lashon machshava. Since Yosef only mentions the thought process, Yoreb Abirur Sha'achim Lom Charu, it's clear the brothers did not sell him. Rakha Midyanim, Hemashru, and of course, if you look at the Pasuk, it's clear that the brothers aren't doing it either, but Rashi adds words. And remember, what does Aksav HaKabbalah say? There's nothing missing in the text. So it's clear that the Midyanim take him out of the pit. Behalum and Abor, they raise him up. Behemachru Le Yishmaelim, and they're the ones who sold him to the Yishmaelim. Umamar Yehuda, and the thing that which Yehuda said, let's sell him. It was an idea, but remember, they weren't near Yosef. They got away from where Yosef was in the pit because they didn't want to hear him screaming while they went to eat lunch. Rak ha-midyanim, shekadmu lavo, the Midyanim, Yehuda may have had an idea, but it never came to fruition because the Midyanim came in the interim, lavo labor, terembo, Yishmaelim, before the Yishmaelim passed by, heimacharu bilti yedias achim, and they sold them without the brothers knowing anything.
Where'd they get the money for the shoes?
Okay, so that's not pshat. It's when Yosef says, "You sold me," which is what he did in last week's parsha. He says, "That's not. That's just saying you put me in a position where I could be sold." Amnam. L'fi amavor sha'achin lo shalchu yadam b'fol amachira. Mehashem ha'isan isabav shelo yino alun l'tzadikim kumosam. So since it's clear now that the brothers did not, they were not involved in the act. And this is God aligning everything to happen. And the Midyanim sold them without the brothers knowing. And their thought process to sell him was in their own mind, for the good. Because they were suspect of him. Because of his dreams. That he had all these thoughts of grandeur that he's going to rule over his brothers. Since they agreed to give him into the hands of others, and through his being submissive underneath whoever would rule over him, his heart would be humbled, and his spirit would be humbled, he wouldn't be haughty anymore. They were just trying to teach him a lesson. We already saw that in the bracha Shimon. The idea when they said let's go kill him, they were only trying to give him the fear of death. But lo lishpoch dam naki, but not to murder him. Kimivuar vayisnak luoso. He now called Eilin Ishtamu Achim Mida Kenegamidus. He says this is where they get Mida Kenegamidus, and he's going to explain.
What's the oath that they made? Especially the oath not to tell anyone.
Stop! I'm talking pshat. Gamalihem nafla. So what's the midah kenegamida? Nafla emas mavis. So on them too, they felt that fear of death. Kasher nech julios miraglim. When they were suspected of being spies. Right? That was the first accusation. Yosef threw at them. What's the punishment everywhere for a spy?
Death.
Right? Death. Asher l'nimus hemdinos achas dasan l'mus. Everybody agrees you kill a spy. And the idea that he wanted to put them in others' hands, Leos Evid Lamo, to become a slave. Shav Gmula Mal Rosham Dvar Agvia. He was going to make them all into slaves. When they said, you know what? Don't take Binyamin, or if we can't send Binyamin home, we're all going to be servants to you. Yehuda Rosham Adabrim Lamochro Rishikela Saviv. Yehuda was the one who was the main speaker when it came to the sale of Yosef. He's the one who tricked his father because this was all his idea. Chalalav prima alalav, the holy shnei bnei mavis v'nishar shakul v'shneim. Yehuda got it worst because Yehuda
lost two sons.
He had two sons born who were destined to die.
How does that mean a kenegamida though?
Because he was now shakul v'shneim, just as his father was lost his sons. Yehuda, but they're destined to die. They weren't meant to live the way that he's viewing this. The he says many times they regretted it and they said in front of Yosef, we're guilty. Right? We're guilty. God has found the sin of your servants. I think this is a good enough of a high point to leave. The next one is also very good, but we'll stop there. Just to see the perspective and how everything comes full circle, really, at the end of this parsha. It's a fascinating perspective to behold. Parshas Vayechi.